Welcome to TFL Talking Trucks Podcast, episode 307.
And this episode is a bit of a holiday episode because we're heading right into Thanksgiving.
Yes.
It's also producer Cole behind the camera's birthday.
Woo!
Which is exciting.
Yes.
So what we're going to be talking about in this episode is things with new trucks that we're thankful for.
And also, I'm going to throw a caveat in there. Also not thankful for.
Yeah, fair enough, because there are a few.
There are a few things we're not liking at all, and a lot of things actually we are thankful for,
but
for truck technology.
Specifically. But before we get into that topic,
yes,
we're going to talk a little bit about some news, rapid fire.
Yes, a little bit of news. And also, this is live on patreon.com/TFLcar, which is our only Patreon page. So you could always, for most of these shows we do, like last week, we didn't do a live show because we were at the ranch. And the internet there is pretty challenging.
Yes, internet's not one of the good things about the ranch. So it depends on the podcast a little bit. But as much as we can, when we're filming here in the studio, we like to do these live so that we can interact a little bit with some of our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah.
They can ask questions. We can try and answer them.
And thank you for your support, as always. This podcast really is because of you, listening and viewing and watching. So thank you very much. So a bit of news that just came out late last week. Well, last week was mostly about Los Angeles Auto Show. I mean, that was pretty huge.
And there was plenty that was going on there, a lot to cover. And Tommy was out there covering it for us. He did go check out the Slate truck in the pouring rain.
Yeah, that was interesting, kind of weird. Yeah, there was an event where there was kind of a dinner event, and they parked the Slate truck because it was a Slate event, on the street side, but it was pouring rain, so they had a tent set up, but it was not conducive to great video production.
No, because if Tommy stood more than like a foot away from the side of the truck, he was just getting drenched.
Yes.
Which is tough, but that's also part of what we do here, is we film in all weather conditions, all times of day, so I've certainly seen some videos of you where it looks like you're a weatherman in the midst of a
like
weather
a
event.
Windstorm.
Yeah, about to get blown over.
Yes.
And we still got to film and do our stuff. It's not the end of the world.
We try, yeah, always, and including winter. And winter's coming up.
Look at that. There's a river.
There's a river next to the truck.
A river of water flowing past the curve. That's crazy. So, yeah, it was very, very rainy, kind of surprising for California.
Yeah.
But Tommy got to spend a little bit more time with the Slate truck, which is always interesting because it's something that we're definitely looking forward to testing. But there's some more news in the truck world.
Exactly. Well, Los Angeles is usually not like a pickup truck show. It's a lot of, you know, SUVs usually get unveiled there. Mm-hmm. Some off-roaders as well in the past.
Yeah.
But Jeep dropped a little bit of truck news coinciding with the show, which was a Jeep Gladiator Willys Edition 41.
And normally, a trim added to a truck wouldn't necessarily be huge news because it's primarily style. It's still Pentastar powered.
Yes.
It's still the same Gladiator that we know and have known for quite a while now because
the
vehicle's been around for a long time. But this one's kind of cool because this Willys edition of the Gladiator has at least pictured here a fabric top, which I like. And it's also got the coolest, very military style olive drab green wheels to match the olive drab exterior.
Oh, man. I mean, Jeep knows how to pull at their strings, right? I mean, the style and some of the features that they offer. And also, these additions are not the highest end, top of the line Jeeps. These are a little bit more affordable in their lineup. And that was kind of they're sprinkling a little bit of new dust on to the Gladiator, which is, like you said, hasn't changed.
It's made to be, like, to your point, made to be a little bit more basic, which makes sense for what they're styling it after. But just because it's more basic on features doesn't mean it's lacking in looks and style. This has that in droves. So I think it's a 32-inch tire that comes with this wheel tire package. And definitely the wheels, the olive drab exterior is already pretty cool. It's got a hood with a vent in it that looks pretty beefy and a little addition to the bumper. So all of that's neat stuff, but the wheels have got to be the highlight. It's almost styled a little bit like a steel wheel. It's a big, solid, very...
almost monoblock, but not quite.
Very utilitarian-looking wheel.
I just want to buy the wheels. Jeep, would you just sell the wheels?
And put them... Put them on what? You don't have a Jeep. You just get the wheels to look at.
My Buchanka.
That could be cool.
I don't know if it's the same bolt pattern. I may have to adapt it.
Put Jeep axles on it. Or body swap the Buchanka onto a 392 Wrangler. Even though it's front engine.
No. That would be hard. That would be very difficult to do. No. Very cool style. They also dropped a little bit other news this year since it's kind of a holiday season. We're beginning looking into the holidays. They also canceled the 4xe powertrain that was supposed to come and now is not around. And I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. We don't know. We didn't get a peek behind the curtain, so to speak. Like, what are some of the reasons for them thinking about it and then kind of canceling it? But it could be good because simplification, right?
Sure. They're simplifying it. To some degree, I understand it, although if they're still waiting on updating the Gladiator, which to our knowledge, we don't have any date for
next
Gladiator that we're expecting.
For 2026, it stays mostly the same.
I think it would be nice if they leveraged a lot of their existing powertrains to give you more choice to make an older platform still be a little bit more relevant. That's something I think they could have done that would give them a little bit of an edge because currently here in the U.S. market, you can't just go out and buy a plug-in hybrid truck. There are hybrid trucks.
Yes.
From Toyota, from Ford.
But not a plug-in hybrid at all.
Not a plug-in hybrid.
Also, there was a rumor of them stuffing a V8 into a Gladiator, which was a rumor we were really appreciating and really liking.
And excited about, because when was the last time you saw a V8 in a mid-sized truck? It's been a while.
Many years, decades.
A 5.3 in a Colorado, was that?
Yes, and there was a H3T the Hummer.
It's been a long time. Yeah. I don't know actually technically what the last mid-sized truck with a V8 on the market was, but it's been a while. It would, and the Gladiator is midsize. It's a little on the long side wheelbase. But having that with a V8 would be really cool. I would like that.
Exactly. But we don't have any confirmation of that, which is a little bit disappointing, I guess. But Jeep did show, a month or two ago, the new Grand Cherokee with a new 2-liter, very densely high-powered, very power dense engine. But here's the thing. I want to hear what you think before we move on into some of the other thankful things. For example, a Sprinter, Mercedes-Benz Sprinter comes to mind. Mm-hmm. It's offered with a 2-liter turbo diesel, but it's a large van, which could be quite heavy, loaded to full capacity. And having small displacement, seemingly high-strung engines in big, heavy vehicles doesn't seem like a super great combination still. What do you think about putting a small engine into a big
and you're vehicle. you're kind of transferring, applying that to the new four-cylinder.
Yeah. So the new four-cylinder is 2 liters, 324-ish horsepower in the Grand Cherokee, and the Grand Cherokee is not a small vehicle.
No.
Either.
Not at all.
What do you think about that engine in the Gladiator? Let me just ask that.
Yeah, it's a tough call because it's an engine that's just coming out, so it's hard to say that it's definitively not going to work. There's certainly a lot of 2 liters is on the small side.
It's
there's
a smaller side, yeah.
There's certainly a lot of mid-sized trucks at this point, the majority, that have moved in the direction of 4-cylinders, turbos. So it's not unprecedented. Most of those 4-cylinders are larger displacement, 2.4, 2.7. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from. A high-strung 4-cylinder for longevity is not necessarily the best thing. But I think it's just too early to make a judgment call for this particular motor. Now, I did read an article that had kind of a cool idea. If they were to take that 4-cylinder that you're talking about, this new 4-cylinder that we've seen in the Jeep Grand Cherokee, and if they were to engineer a V8 out of that basic design, then they could have a new generation V8 that could be very potent, really effective. And that would not be the first time, far from the first time, that a manufacturer has taken a 4-cylinder and used it as the basis for developing a V8. That's
now you're talking. And I know a lot of German manufacturers use 4-liter V8s, also turbocharged 4-liter V8s, which are amazing engines for many different applications.
Yeah, and if you double up on that engine that you're talking about, you said, what, 320?
Yeah, only 320. It's turbocharged, of course.
Yeah.
But about 300, double that.
So what if they double that?
That would be at least 600 horse.
I'd be happy then.
Easily.
Yeah. So I think that would be great because the 5.7 and the 6.4 Hemis have been around for a long time.
What if they called it the next generation Hemi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is not an original thought of mine. That's from an article that I was reading from another outlet. But I do think they brought up a good point. It would be pretty cool. So who knows? Who knows what the future holds? I would still love to, even if it's an old school 6.4 Hemi or even a 5.7.
Oh, 5.7, yeah.
I would love to see something like that in the Gladiator.
Keep it simple. I mean, I think my theme recently. Like, why? I know 6.4 exists in the 392 Wrangler.
Yeah.
And it might be easy to put it in the Gladiator, but I don't want it to cost 90 grand either. You know,
sure. So you're thinking 5.7.
Yeah, keep it simpler.
Yeah, I like that idea. Well, and then the Wrangler Moabs that they've shown off have a V8.
Yes.
And they're not $100,000 like
some
other 392 Wrangler is.
Yeah.
So it could even be possible. It would be really nice. I would love
V8
to see it.
V8 all things, we
V8
say.
V8 in a Gladiator would be so cool.
Yes. So what are some of the – do you want to start with your list? What are some of the things you're thankful for?
Sure. So yeah, getting to the main topic of the podcast today, Andre and I had slightly different approaches for the things we highlighted as us being thankful for. We haven't talked about each other's lists.
No, it's going to be kind of a surprise for the most part.
There's a chance that we picked some similar things, but it sounds like since we took kind of a different approach, maybe not. Because I picked developments in the truck industry that have happened over time that have resulted in things we're thankful for that make trucks better than they used to be, more capable, more drivable. That was my approach.
Okay. And I looked at like the last year. This is not a year in review show, but I still looked at the last year and I was like, what are some of the coolest trucks that have come out? And also relating to kind of like really cool stuff. So maybe similar approach in a way to yours.
Mine's a little more broad, maybe.
But I was focused on the last at least 11 months. So I was looking more recently and some events that happened this year as well.
So is your list almost like your, because each of us picked five things. Mm-hmm. Is your list almost like your top five trucks that you tested in a way?
Kind of, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And events, including events we went to test those trucks.
So I think that'll actually be cool because that will let us cover a broader scope of things, you know?
All right, so what do you got? What's your one of your things?
So piggybacking a little bit off of what we've just been talking about, I love the diversity and powertrain options that you can find in trucks today because it used to be back in the day that you would either find a larger truck with a naturally aspirated gas V8 or maybe a slightly smaller truck with a naturally aspirated gas V6. Maybe an even smaller truck with a naturally aspirated gas four-cylinder. But there wasn't a whole lot of diversity in powertrain options.
Mm-hmm.
These days, like we said, here in the States, there's not a good plug-in hybrid option. Some other markets there are, which is cool. And maybe still someday we'll get something like that here on our shores. But you can still find tons of diesel trucks, even of varying sizes, granted. We're out of mid-size diesel trucks.
And
there's some out there on the used market.
Out of full-size half-ton diesels. Well, except for
3-liter Duramax.
Yeah, except for GM.
So not as many diesel options as maybe a couple years ago there was, because you used to be able to get an Eco Diesel in the Jeep. You could get the Colorado with a smaller diesel.
Yeah.
Which were cool options. Those trucks are still out there, so you could buy them used if you want to factor that into things. But there's still quite a few really good diesel truck options. There's still some big V8s that you can get from the factory. You can get a naturally aspirated V6. You can get all kinds of turbo powertrains. You can get trucks that are electric. Soon enough, Ram's even going to have a range-extended electric truck. And a little later on, Scout is going to have a similar kind of powertrain you can buy, which is really very broad scope. So you can pick out a truck that's going to fit your specific use case with a powertrain that's going to fit your use case. And I think that's really cool because that didn't used to really be a thing.
No, and I think what you're saying is dovetailing in kind of what we did last week for the podcast, which look at all the full-size trucks that we have for Truck of the Year competition. And when we opened those hoods on those trucks, we said, okay, this has this engine, but there's a variety of engines you could put in its place as well.
And even so, a couple podcasts ago, we were talking about our favorite engines that you can buy now. So you could check out that podcast if you want to see some of our favorites. But I just love the fact that over time, there's become more and more options for you if you're shopping for a truck. What kind of powertrain do you want? It doesn't just have to be some naturally aspirated gas engine. You could go diesel. You could go slightly electrified. Yeah, hybrid or full electric. You could go turbo.
Yeah.
Or you could keep it old school, naturally aspirated, V8 or V6. All those options are out there, which is really neat.
Exactly. And I guess let me do one that kind of follows up.
Yeah, let's hear one from
your
list.
I love that there's a couple more options this year, at least recently, for more efficient engines and trucks. Specifically, Cole, I'm talking about we in our long-term fleet this year, we had a Maverick all-wheel drive hybrid, which is crazy efficient.
It was. As you started to bring up trucks that we own, I started thinking about some of the trucks, and I thought about our Coyote-powered F-150, our Deuce and a Half.
Single digit.
So we have some trucks on the other side of the spectrum, but to your point, our Maverick was really good on fuel economy.
And what kind of brought this point in home for me is for our testing this year for Truck of the Year full-size half-ton, we have an F-150 hybrid, which is the bigger brother to the Ford Maverick, obviously. Cole, I recently just commuted in the F-150 hybrid, which is a 2025 model. And I sent you an image of my trip meter. So check out my trip computer. So I drove about 132 miles, and it says 56.1 of those miles were on electricity. And granted, this is not a lot of highway. I mean, I do some highway driving in my commute. So you could see I spent about 4 hours driving about 132 miles. But what is it, 40%-ish of my driving was electric. And this is not a plug-in hybrid. This is just a regular hybrid in a truck, and it's saying 25.9 mpg.
Yeah, so about 26 miles per gallon in an F-150.
Which is a pretty large vehicle, very large and heavy.
Definitely a sizable truck. That's a good number. So really impressive stuff, and depends on what your priorities are. But yeah. Like you're saying, there's really a lot of awesome powertrain options out there.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the winter's bestseller pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Yeah, and also Zach and I recently did a trip from Detroit to here in a two-wheel drive Ram with a Hurricane 3-liter. And we got 25 mpg also. I know it was, you know, it was a two-wheel drive truck, which was a little bit lighter. Plus, it had an efficiency rear axle. But nonetheless, those trucks do exist. So if you want a little bit better efficiency, so it kind of dovetails with what you're saying.
And I would be happy with numbers like those. talking about fuel economy is maybe not the sexiest thing in the world, but it is definitely important, especially if you're using a truck as part of your business that directly affects your bottom line. And even just a truck as a daily driver, think about the fuel costs added up over years and years. Stuff like that's important.
Yes. Can I do something that I'm not thankful for?
Sure, yeah, let's hear one.
I wasn't thankful this year for recalls. I was not. I think most of us can relate to this.
It was a big recall year.
But I was looking back into some of the stories we did over the last 10, 11 months, and basically every manufacturer you can think of had some sort of significant pickup truck-related recall. I'm not talking about like bad stickers in the door. I'm talking about like engine problems, transmission problems, axle, you know, serious components where things were actually going wrong in a very big way.
Yeah, GM's had the 6.2 V8 failures. They've had transmission.
Allison branded 10 speeds.
Yep,
in
transmission issues.
Toyota recalled more engines.
They're
on the
still
Tundra.
Dealing with the V6s, yeah. Ford, famously, across the whole brand, had well over 100 recalls.
Yes.
So, yeah, just tons of recalls in general.
Yeah.
Trying to think, was there any big news at
Ram didn't have huge, significant recalls on their recent trucks, but they were just coming off, a couple of years ago, coming off, you know, some of the emissions scandals
True.
There.
Yeah.
And I know they had some growing pains with the original electrical components, you know, on some of the Hurricane engines, but it seems like they ironed out a lot of those issues recently.
It's been a busy year for recalls, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't know. So basically, most of those recalls did not affect us personally. You know, like you were mentioning, we do have a pretty extensive long-term fleet of used and also new pickup trucks. So we weren't affected personally speaking, otherwise we would be speaking out more about this. But just looking in general and reading some of your comments and letters and emails, messages of all kinds where you guys are reporting problems to us.
Yeah, and we try to do our best to put that information out there so that people are informed if they're shopping with their own money to buy a truck. We also buy, as a company, several of these vehicles to try and test them out from all the different brands. And definitely if we have issues with the truck, we'll make videos about it. We try to make videos about any big issues that are going on and being investigated because that's important things for buyers to know. And it's been a busy year. There's definitely been some pretty high-profile issues.
Yeah, specifically like this last few months, which is... Okay, what's your next thing that you're thankful for?
Also piggybacking off of the powertrain discussion, modern transmissions. Now I know, and we just brought it up, there have been some transmission issues in specific vehicles.
Okay.
But if we take a broad look at things, think about, you remember our good buddy Brendan?
Yes.
He's got a 2500 Chevy Suburban with an 8.1. It's rated to tow something crazy like 12,000 pounds.
In an SUV.
In an SUV.
Yes.
Which is awesome. So it's a great vehicle, but it also has, if I remember right, a 4L80.
I was holding four fingers up, yes.
Now
four speed.
As mean as that 8.1 is, towing in the mountains, especially 10, 12,000 pounds, with a four-speed automatic, not great.
The spacing between those gears is probably quite far.
Yeah. So if it's got a downshift, it's going to feel like it downshifted all the way.
I think if David was here, our friend David Morrow was on this podcast, I think he would probably...
You think he would smack me?
I don't know if he would smack you, but he would definitely remind us that reliability on some of the older transmissions, not all of them, obviously, not most of them, but some
maybe
of
not
those...
Maybe not a 4L60 so much.
4L80 was quite good.
True. Yes, and and there's definitely older transmissions that have proved themselves to be very strong,
and there's
newer.
Some that were terrible.
Yeah, yeah. There was also that back in the day as well, and there are some new transmissions that are having some issues. So you could make an argument that transmissions aren't getting any better, but objectively, towing with an 8-speed or a 10-speed transmission, once, I say it all the time, but especially up here in the mountains, it makes a huge difference. So that has been a monumental upgrade for trucks, especially when you're towing heavy.
Yeah, and that, we've noticed this also, well, in our iGauntlet testing, we've noticed this for sure. We also have noticed it in something fun we do, which is drag racing and acceleration testing, mm-hmm. right? Because as soon as you give that engine a little bit more ratios, or we also do rolling start, like a passing maneuver test, where if the engine is in the right gear, it can explode up, you know, in its speed and really be really fun and also quite good in accelerating. Yeah. And also, same thing on the deceleration, right? You have more gears. You could stop yourself a little bit more effectively.
Yeah, because you can keep yourself in that most effective window or range of RPM all the time. And that makes your experience driving the vehicle, pulling a trailer, whatever it is that you're doing, much better. So modern transmissions, especially modern automatics, have come a long way, especially versus way back in the day, 70s, 80s, old slush boxes, 3-speeds. Mm-hmm. Ugh. not great.
Yeah, but what do you think? I know why most manuals went away from trucks, from pickup trucks. I understand it because if people are not buying them in great quantities, then it's difficult to sell them, right, and produce them. But I would like to see some more future options with manual transmissions.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I miss it
yeah.
a little bit. It went away from the Cummins in 2018, mm-hmm. I believe. And that
I think
was
you
one
and I
of
cried that year.
We did. We didn't know each other, but separately.
But yes, separately we did cry.
At that point, yeah.
Yeah.
And was the Ram, was that the last HD?
I think
manual?
So, yes. I think so, because I think Ford.
That's the last holdout?
Ford did away with those earlier. GM, gosh, it was a while ago for GM. Mm-hmm. Toyota still, I mean, the big trucks
yeah,
from.
Went away from the big trucks.
But like Tacoma still has one.
Yeah.
As an option.
And until recently, Gladiator had it. So yeah, they are kind of going away. It's a niche thing, especially in a diesel truck. I actually think Rowan Gears is a lot of fun. Those last, you know, 2017, 2018 G56 six-speed Cummins are a lot of fun to drive. It makes you feel a little bit like
they're not
going to
win any drag races, though, but I don't think that was the point.
No.
It was just an ability to drive, be connected to your truck. Also, you know, you know exactly what gear you're in.
Yeah,
cool. Instead of wondering.
Every gear is in a different zip code. That's part of the reason that it takes a while to move between them.
Yes.
And you kind of come off of boost between gears. But it's great being able to manually select a gear. You know you're going to stay in that gear. It gives you a lot of control over the behavior of the truck. And especially on some of those later diesel manual trucks, when you use the exhaust brake and you're locked into a gear, that exhaust brake does a lot. So I love driving in a later model G56 Cummins with the exhaust brake.
Fantastic combo. I think there's something like, we were doing iGauntlet testing last week, right? We saw a couple of trucks, semis, having issues on the mountain with hot brakes or losing brakes. We actually saw some aftermath.
We were struggling with brakes a little bit
ourselves. Yeah, we were smoking our own brakes during some of our truck of the year testing there. But imagine if we were in manually like 6-speed vehicles, and I know semis, I mean, mostly went to automated manuals, right?
Yeah, true.
But if the driver is connected, you know, involved in driving experience, those problems I think would be more far in between, right? Because the driver would be more engaged and just in control of that vehicle a little bit better. That's my impression.
Yeah, some of the automated transmissions in modern semi-trucks are really impressive. I had the really cool opportunity to get to drive a Western Star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe it was a Western
Star.
Yeah. And that had a really intuitive and cool system for the transmission where if you wanted the truck to downshift and use its exhaust brake to slow you down, you could adjust how aggressive it was using a column-mounted or a stock mounted on the steering column.
Yeah.
And if you dropped it down a couple rungs, it would more aggressively downshift and engine brake. So that technology is all really cool stuff, but I do like Rowan gears.
Exactly. And it seems like the newer vehicles, all of them, including semi-trucks, like you were saying, have a computer that's trying to think for you more frequently, right? Thinking for the driver instead of the driver. And when it works beautifully.
Yeah.
But there could be those little nuances, little cases where, you know, the computer may not be quite on top of it as you thought. We have a question from or a comment from Dylan Mays.
And here. One of our cameras is right in the middle of it, so I can't read it from where I'm sitting. Perfect.
I'll do it. Why won't a manufacturer come out with a plug-in hybrid V8 truck, or at least a regular hybrid V8 truck, not like an e-torque? Dylan, you and I are thinking on the same page. Remember what I said in our favorite engine podcast?
Be like a Porsche 918.
Yes. I said that we talked about GM investing into next generation V8 engines.
Yeah.
Remember? And I said, why don't they use that new V8, the one that they're working on, but slap an little electric motor on the back of it? Make it a hybrid. You saw what happened in the F-150 hybrid, right? You have a little bit of electric coasting, recharging, power export features, efficiency, a lot of benefits, and a V8 noise.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
I think that it would be really cool. You would just have to figure out the marketing of it to make it appeal to people that are looking for the maximum in performance. Because it's been proven before that you can pair a very high-performance V8 with a hybrid system and get a boatload of total system output and make a very high-performing, capable vehicle. That's been done a lot in especially exotic cars, imported cars. On the truck side of things, a lot of the people that are shopping around for V8s are probably shopping around for it because it's a little bit more old school. It's a little bit simpler. Maybe they don't want the complexity of turbos. Maybe they don't want the complexity of a hybrid system. So there may be some hurdles there in marketing that vehicle, but if you could market it in a way to say, we got the V8, so we got the cool factor, and we got the hybrid, so it's the best of everything. It might be doable. It'd be neat.
And I think, I agree. And I think one way in Dylan's comment, I don't think a plug-in hybrid would work because that would be a hard thing to sell, like to your point, because you're introducing large battery, right? You're introducing a lot of other components, maybe a larger electric motor or maybe multiple electric motors at that point, right? Mm-hmm. So you're introducing a lot of components. Those components also they weigh a lot, right? So they take away from payload, they take away from a lot of other aspects of that truck, that pickup truck. But I think, and I keep using Ford because what Toyota has done in their hybrid Tundras and Tacomas is they combine electric motors with their engines to make power,
yeah,
but not effectively make more efficiency out of it. So that was their focus for them. Their focus was to provide more than V8 levels of power. But I think what Ford did, they kind of gave you more power, but also gave you efficiency. So that's what I want to see. I want to see both of those.
Yeah, there's definitely a way to build it and make it function really well. It's, I think, a bigger question of getting people to accept it. Because you and I have actually talked to truck buyers who felt like even a system as mild as the e-torque system that's on the 5.7 Hemi.
And also, people hate turbos.
That
also
felt like e-torque ruined the way that it drove.
And it does not.
I mean,
if the system is broken,
it
yes,
does
of
really,
course.
Well, sure, yeah.
Of course it ruins it.
But for the most part, it does very little.
It does very, very little. Yeah. It fills in maybe a little gap between the gear changes.
Yeah.
It makes your auto stop start of your engine maybe a little bit smoother. But to make it slower, it will never do.
No, as Tommy says, in the most extreme of circumstances, having e-torque or not having it is not a night and day difference. What Tommy would say is it's a night and late evening difference.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Think about like,
but at that
5 o'clock in Colorado at this time of year.
Yes,
It's
but
nighttime.
At that point, why even include e-torque? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know it helps them, with average fuel efficiency for the manufacturer. I mean, they can eke out those small percentages, and it kind of helps them in the holistic way. But if it's not providing a big benefit to the consumer, to the customer, I say don't do it. You know.
And I think there's probably a lot of people that would agree.
Yeah. So I think, Dylan, if that was the case, and Dylan agrees with me.
I don't see any evidence of that.
Well, because sheer fact that he commented this, why won't they make a hybrid V8 truck? I think there's at least one customer, Dylan.
Yeah.
Dylan would buy it.
Well, there might need to be a few more, but I think it could I think it could be cool.
I'll buy one.
Yeah, well, right on.
There's
two. It's a niche market.
Okay. So let me see. So we hit my efficiency point.
Yes.
So I was really thankful that you and I got to go to Davis Dam because that was important. That was with Ram Heavy Duty. Trucks that we did earlier this year, and it was kind of a bucket list item. Yeah, there is the big trailer that we were pulling. That was kind of a bucket list item for me because Davis Dam grade, which is between Nevada and Arizona, is instrumental in how manufacturers rate their vehicles for towing. It's part of the J2807 SAE standard.
Yeah.
We were not there in the hot months. Well, maybe that's a good thing. But we actually saw the route. We drove it many, many times during that day or 2 days. So that was a cool experience, I thought.
It was, and it was really cool to get to compare Davis Dam to the Ike that we're obviously so familiar with. And looking back at the video, I apparently chose to wear the tightest shirt I own. For that event.
Well, but you were showing off some of your, stature and muscular.
Right.
Muscular
well, it takes a very tight shirt to do that, but very small one. But it is really cool to get to tow heavy trailers. What was the heaviest trailer that Ram had set up for us there? It was around 30?
Well, we were pulling that big tractor, right? I think that was the heavier load.
Yeah.
They also had the fifth wheel camping trailer, which was larger profile but was lighter.
Yeah.
I thought this was, I think it was over 20, but I don't think it was 30.
Okay. It was still
I wish it would have been 30 because it would have been a harder test. But you have to keep in mind, a lot of journalists, because this was a journalist event as well.
Yeah.
They don't have CDLs.
You do.
So, I do, yeah. So I would have been the only person driving it, which would be cool, but I wasn't.
So fair enough.
So you kind of have to be mindful of some of that.
It was still a sizable trailer, which meant we got to test out these trucks under some pretty challenging circumstances. Again, it was hard for us not to make a lot of comparisons between Davis Dam and the Ike. I think the main thing as a test and as a challenge that Davis Dam has going for it is what you brought up, temperature, cooling systems, that is number one. The Ike is definitely more challenging in its grade because it's quite a bit steeper.
And steeper maybe for longer. Davis Dam is actually overall a longer distance.
Yeah.
Right? But it kind of levels out several times within that distance. Ike Gauntlet almost never levels out. I mean, once you're going down or up it, you're really on the incline.
And then the other challenge with the Ike is elevation and air density, because by the time you get to the top, you're down how much from sea level?
So that's about a third.
Yeah.
So
of the oxygen.
Of the air density, yes.
Is gone.
Yeah. So it's hard to say how much oxygen is gone because I'm not a scientist, and oxygen is not... There's a lot more nitrogen in the air than oxygen.
So, I think people know we're not scientists.
yes, but let's say one third of air density is gone.
Yeah, so that makes it challenging as well because
which potentially means a third of your power potential is gone.
Yeah, depends if it's a naturally aspirated truck or not because anything that's forced induction is going to be a little bit better.
A little bit better, yeah, definitely. But that was a cool experience. I think you loved it as well.
Oh, yeah, it was really cool.
And just to see, and I think it was 75 degrees maybe when we were there, maybe 80, but the temperatures there can get up to above. And I think
there's some
prerequisites. Like it has to be at least 100 degrees, right?
For them to the J2807 SAE run that's going to certify.
And they have to do maximum AC when they're pulling a trailer as well.
Yeah, and
there's several different things that must be met.
Depending on the category of truck, they have to maintain a certain minimum speed as well. So it's definitely a challenging test. And because it's something that we've heard about so much, talking about tow ratings on trucks, that was a really cool thing that Andre and I got to go check out in person, tow trailers on it, see it firsthand.
Yes. What's your next item?
We can kind of piggyback off of this as well, talking about...
Okay.
Capability in modern trucks.
Ooh.
Something that we've discussed a little bit in the past. I love older trucks as much as anybody, but the amount
you own one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've got a 12-valve Cummins that was rated from the factory to tow about 12,000 pounds.
Oh, that's cute. Sorry.
Watch yourself. 12,000 is enough.
It's actually a lot.
For me. What's your Tundra rated to tow?
8,500 pounds?
Not even over 10, Andre?
Yes, no.
Come on. Yeah.
No, 12,000 is actually a lot for daily work.
And
that's a lot.
That's all the towing capability I need. The heaviest things I need to haul around are my broken down project cars.
There you go.
And that's under 12. So unless I was pulling maybe several of them at the same time, which I'm not because I don't have a trailer big enough to do that.
Yes.
12,000, not a bad number, but these days... In an F-250 or 2500, you can reasonably expect to be closing in on 20,000 pounds of towing capability. And then some of the most capable trucks that you could go out there, buy from the factory, like that F-450 that you pulled a trailer with when we were in Michigan.
We have a video of this. It was a two-wheel drive, two-door.
40,000 pounds.
Yeah, there it is. Holy cow. That's the right thing to say.
And you could say the same thing about payload. You can go to the dealership and buy trucks that have an unbelievable amount of payload. So the capability in modern trucks to do work is incredible. And not only what they're rated to do, but how they feel doing it. Like we discussed, the transmissions make a huge difference. But modern brakes, modern suspension, and wheelbases and tires and steering and everything they've added to trucks now makes them not only be able to haul more and pull more, but they feel better doing it.
I was remembering, as I'm watching this video, my thoughts started like flooding. My memories started flooding in. Like I remember when we just got going, I could feel the entire frame like try to twist, right? Because you're applying 1,200 pound-feet of torque.
Yeah.
And through the transmission.
So much torque, the chassis twisted.
Well, yeah, it's like you can see it on semi-trucks sometimes when the semi-truck takes off from a line.
And
sometimes,
on Dom Toretto's Charger.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He lives life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, and you pulled this trailer much more than a quarter mile.
It was something else.
To be fair about what we're saying, 40,000 pounds on this truck is a lot.
Yeah, and I could feel it coming down this little hill. This was at Romeo Proving Grounds that Ford set up this event at, right?
Yeah.
And you could see some of the grades. It's hard to see on camera, but it's actually a pretty sizable incline and decline.
So this is a bit extreme. It's more than a bit extreme. This is very extreme.
Very extreme, yes.
But the fact that you could go to a dealership and buy a truck that theoretically can pull 40,000 pounds is...
Or even 35,000.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or 30,000 or 25. All of these are massive numbers. That's big trailers for the average person. I'm sure there's someone out there, maybe Dan Atkinson, listening to us.
Oh, he's laughing right now.
Who's a truck driver laughing at 40,000 pounds is nothing.
Yes. But he's also got a giant semi-truck that, you know, is heavier and longer wheelbase. You know, as soon as you make something smaller, like a pickup truck, especially this two-door, that was not a very long truck. You know, you need that stability. You need that footprint.
Yeah. And that is one of the challenges with a truck like this is it is pretty compact and pretty lightweight. The trailer outweighs it.
Several times.
Yeah, so much
that
it's maybe never going to feel that great doing it.
Yeah, I could feel the difference between the trailer and the truck when we were heading down this little this little downgrade, because you can feel the mass kind of pushing you along, right? So you want to be very precise with your, you know, driving style.
But other than for video, we try not to pull trailers that are at the maximum of what a truck is rated to tow anyway. There are some times that we do that specifically in the Ike Gauntlet to see how trucks act when they're right at that limit, because it's important testing. But if we're going to be pulling a trailer for another reason, going cross country, doing something, we're ideally going to pick a truck that's rated to pull a lot more than what we're actually doing.
Yeah, for example, we own a Chevy Silverado 2500 HD. So when we're pulling a trailer that could be 8,000 or 9,000 pounds, we could potentially use the F-150, right? But we don't.
No, because it's not
ideal. We go for the bigger guy.
Yeah, if we can.
Especially in the mountains, definitely try to pick a much bigger pickup truck for the job that you have at hand.
So what's your next thankful?
Well, I'm thankful for a couple more things. First of all, I'm thankful for Hellcat engines.
Mm.
We currently we have a loan on loan from Dodge, a Durango Hellcat jailbreak right now. And we just took it to lunch. And that's just such a pleasing experience.
Roman was kind. I had come to the office on Friday with my leased, nearly free little electric Fiat.
That you own?
Yeah, I leased. And Roman asked, do you want to take the Durango Hellcat home for the weekend?
Yes, please.
I didn't have to think too long about it. So got to drive that all throughout the weekend. My fiance loved it. I loved it. I slammed through a tank of fuel on it.
But you weren't trying to slam through a tank of fuel.
No, and I didn't even go that far. I didn't go anywhere over the weekend, just around town. But you can't stay out of the pedal, even if you're not flooring it at every light. It's fun to get into the pedal just enough so that you can hear the supercharger buzzing a little bit. It is so much fun. That engine's been around for a long time. They could make it for the next 30 years and it would still be entertaining.
Yeah, I agree with you 110%. And the reason why I bring this up also is that it's still rumored. I mean, we don't have complete, you know, we know the TRX is coming back. We just don't know exactly when. That's what I mean. But we think and we know that it will have a version of this Hellcat engine in it, the supercharged V8 engine. We just don't know exactly what power levels it will be or what type it will be. But I'm glad it's coming back, especially in the pickup truck of that caliber, just because you could hear the supercharger a little bit. It just involves you on many different levels. It's very quick and fun. It's also, you know, can haul a trailer if you really need it to. I mean, it won't pull 12,000, but it will pull. It's ready to tow what it was like 8,200 pounds. So I'm really thankful for that.
Well, and then we were just at SEMA and we saw the Raptor R Ford had brought to the show and put a 3-liter Whipple supercharger on that they're saying is going to have over 900 horsepower.
Can't even imagine driving that.
That would be something fun to look forward to. Yeah.
Definitely. So next year, we'll be talking about more thankful things. So yeah, really, it kind of dovetails into your item where engine choices, right?
Yeah.
So there's so many choices for daily work and also incredible fun as well. So that's really cool.
As we're talking about horsepower,
mm-hmm.
once again, it leads me right into my next topic.
How did I know this?
It's fantastic, and we didn't even plan this out.
Mm.
High-output diesel engines and exhaust brakes,
mm-hmm.
something I'm very thankful for. As much as I love the Raptor R, a supercharged V8, the TRX. And even how mind-numbingly fast some of the electric trucks you can go out there and buy are, I think all those things are cool. The trucks that get me the most excited still are the diesels that you could go out and buy, the Power Stroke high output. Our Duramax, it sounds a little weird to say it, but I would describe it as a sporty engine. You tip into the throttle, you give it 3/4 throttle at or around maybe 15 miles per hour, lights up the rear tires like nothing.
Exactly. And when you were just talking about the Duramax V8, I remember we had a a Overland build truck.
I think Cole
can look this up. It had a camper on top of it. It was on 37s. It was a GMC Sierra 84X AV edition. It was an Overland build that was going to be auctioned for charity. It was going to be auctioned for the foundation, which does charitable work for overlanding. I think it was more recent than this. It had a little camper. I think it was an off-road video. Probably was an off-road video.
We do a lot of videos. It's kind of hard to search through them all sometimes.
Wait. Cole can find it.
Cole can find it.
That truck, you and I went to the ranch. I remember I turned and I put my foot down, and this 10,000-pound truck, there it is, first dirt, leapt into action.
Yeah.
And it was shocking to me because as heavy as it is, it does have slightly modified intake. It has a snorkel, AV snorkel.
Yeah.
And a slightly freed up exhaust system. But it wasn't a big boost in power.
No.
It was just a little bit more freedom.
And it's funny because as far as torque figures go, this is actually the least torquey of all the HD engines that are currently on sale. So the fact that the least torquey of all of them can light up the rear tires when that's not at all your intention is unbelievable. It's just effortless power in these trucks. And what I love so much is that you can get into any modern HD diesel truck and you have so much power. If you go from a Jeep or a 4Runner or something that's loaded up with equipment, maybe it's some kind of overlander and like what we're looking at on Andre's video, it's got a camper on the back of it, it's got a little fridge, it's got steel bumpers, winch, off-road lights, all that stuff. They feel weighed down in any other vehicle. To your point, in an HD truck, you just don't notice. And it's the same thing even any modern diesel truck. You link up a trailer that's much below 10,000 pounds and...
Especially like...
You could still win some drag races.
As much as like I like the 5-liter Coyote, right? Putting a big giant trailer behind it, which weighs like 8,000 or 9,000 pounds and then pulling... And then you notice it, right? You notice it's much slower, it works harder, it's not as easy to stop. A diesel truck, like you're saying, with an exhaust brake, they stop confidently, they go. Yeah, they're quite impressive. And they have all the emission systems on them, which are not power adders.
No, and they still make boatloads of power. Yeah. And to your point, the exhaust brakes from the factory, just a fantastic thing in modern diesel trucks. I'll bring up my 12-valve Cummins again, my old truck that I love. But in factory form, that truck had 175 horsepower. It topped out at like 75 miles an hour. And
this was only 30 years ago.
Trucks, granted, with all this that we're saying in mind, trucks are not about speed and acceleration necessarily. But if you linked up my truck in factory form to a trailer and you started pulling up a steep hill,
it will notice it.
Yeah, it was working very hard. So in a modern diesel truck, when you can face basically any grade, and you could
feel almost
cars.
Invincible.
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know,
with a lot of these trucks. Yeah, it's amazing.
Here's
one item on my list. It has to do with what Toyota has been doing recently. So what shocked me and what I was thankful for was a Toyota side-by-side. And I know it's not a pickup truck, and I know it's not on sale, but you and I went to SEMA this year, and we saw a Toyota Scion branded.
Yeah.
That was another shocker. Scion-branded hybrid, 300 horsepower plus, and also very heavy and very beefy side-by-side.
Which the Scion branding is also interesting to your point because there are a lot of... most people remember the Scion brand. Cole, do you remember Scion? Cole remembers Scion. But people don't associate Scion with off-road.
No.
That was not at all...
Or trucks of any kind.
Not the brand at all. So this is definitely a big departure.
You can see the shock on my face, I think. Did you see that?
Yeah. So this was something that we were really not expecting to see whatsoever. if Toyota got into the side-by-side market, that could be really interesting. They could shake things up very much. This particular side-by-side that they built for SEMA is very different from what you would go out and buy on the market now, because it would be significantly heavier, more bigger, more substantial. That's how it looked and felt in person. This is a substantial powertrain.
And actually, one of the members of the engineering team on this project, because Toyota did it in-house.
Yeah.
They did not, you know, give an engine to a builder and say, hey, here, come up with a side-by-side for us. They used their own engineers, their own design studio at Calte. And so this is a Toyota effort. And one of the engineers said this side-by-side could be weighing around 4,000 pounds, which would make it the heaviest side-by-side I've ever seen.
Yeah, an absolute beast. This would not be an impossible or completely unprecedented thing, though, because everyone knows Honda is huge in the power sports world.
Yeah.
That being said, Honda is kind of unique because there's not a lot of companies out there that make cars, motorcycles, ATVs, side-by-sides, lawnmowers, generators, Formula One car engines, private jets.
Jet planes, yes.
Yeah.
There's not a lot.
Huh? Yamaha does instruments. Yeah, Cole brings up a good point. But Honda makes a lot of different things. So they're a little unique in that. Toyota stepping into the side-by-side world, I wouldn't say that it's impossible, but Toyota is generally pretty conservative. They don't usually do stuff that's super out there. So I would be surprised if they do this.
But I think they have the resources to do it.
Oh,
I mean, if they
sure.
make a decision to do it,
they're a massive.
They will do it for sure. It's just
they're much bigger than basically any other side-by-side manufacturer.
And I was going to bring one more truck in this at SEMA with Toyota. And what the only thing I'm hoping for, if Toyota ever decides to sell the Scion off-roader side-by-side, to make it simpler and lighter. That's my only.
Sure. Maybe a non-hybrid version.
Maybe a two-door version. It doesn't all have to be four-door.
What if it had a GR Corolla motor in it?
Ooh.
That'd be cool.
See, now we're getting somewhere. So also could be 300 horsepower, but done in a different way.
Yeah.
This had a Toyota Tacoma hybrid powertrain, basically a four-cylinder turbo electric system.
Which is not a, to your point, not a slim powertrain.
No, it's not a very slim one, and it's also not the most lightweight.
Yeah.
But also, they had a controversial vehicle at SEMA, which was the Tacoma H2, which was a hybrid, hydrogen-powered Tacoma. And I was kind of excited by this, because I do that. But a lot of other journalists and a lot of our viewers were quite negative about this.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about this, because we go to SEMA a lot.
Yes.
We see a lot of different vehicles. There are tons of V8 swapped this and that with
amazing things.
40-inch tires and solid axles, and it's awesome. But putting a hydrogen powertrain in a Tacoma and making it work and making it this well-engineered and well-executed is such a flex, because that's something that really only a company like Toyota would have the engineering prowess to do. If you gave me enough time, like a lot of years.
And a lot of money.
I could figure out putting a V8 and 40-inch tires on a Tacoma, especially if you give me a good angle grinder and a Sawzall. And your standards are really low.
Yeah.
But the fact that Toyota designed this hydrogen thing, I think a lot of people that watched our video about it were saying, well, this doesn't make sense. The hydrogen
How would you refuel a hydrogen Tacoma?
That's besides the point. They're not trying to bring this to market. This is just an example of what they're capable of. And I think that's badass.
Yeah.
That they made it.
And it has a lot of very cool specs. Look at the suspension components.
Mm-hmm.
They went out and they just like flexed all over the place with a, you know, kind of a long travel suspension under it, special skid plates, everything. Also, it had a camper in the back.
had what, 547 horsepower.
Only 547 horsepower.
And it had a rear locker as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they lifted it. They did all kinds of really cool stuff to it. They had built it into kind of an overlander. So even the water byproduct from the hydrogen powertrain was recovered in the truck, and it could be used to wash dishes or for you to shower with. So they had done all these really neat things in the engineering of this vehicle. And I think a lot of people overlooked it because they looked at this as something
they
don't want to buy.
If this was sold now, I agree, this would not be a good choice because there's only, 40 hydrogen fueling stations in California?
But as a demonstration of what's possible and what Toyota's capable of, it's pretty badass.
It had 15 kilowatt export power.
Yeah.
Not 7.2 like the Ford systems or 10 something like the GM, Silverado electric trucks. It had 15 kilowatt of export power.
Yeah.
You could run maybe 2 homes off of this if you really wanted to.
It's tons.
It's a mobile
power station.
Mobile
basically.
Power station. All it needs is a tiny bit of hydrogen. Small amount of hydrogen. But I thought it was a cool concept.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool too. It's like a lot of the people that were commenting on the video, it's not something either of us would want to buy in this moment. But it's amazing that Toyota was able to build it.
But I see, here's my bet, okay? And I think Roman and I were also betting against each other on this.
Yeah.
During one of our infamous meetings, staff meetings.
Long meetings.
Yes. He was saying something like, oh, this is just a one and done. This is just a flex that, like you said, that Toyota wanted to show off a little bit some of their engineering. And I was like, you know what? I could see the next generation Tacoma, which should arrive in 6 years from now, in that generation, we could see this as a possible option, right? That's my bet.
Sure. Yeah.
Given 6 years or 7 years, if there's more hydrogen infrastructure around the country or maybe certain areas, I think we could actually see a production version of this.
They make a production hydrogen car now. They have the Mirai.
They do.
That's where they pulled a lot of those hydrogen powertrain components from to build that Tacoma initially, although heavily modified that system. And sure, especially on a small scale, maybe a couple thousand of them. I could see them maybe making
not cross country.
Some Tacomas.
If you live in the middle of South Dakota, maybe it's not an option for you. Maybe you don't have a hydrogen station.
And honestly, if they did build that, the people that are absolute Toyota nuts, huge fans of the brand, they would fight each other with fists
to get on the list
to get their hands on this ultra rare Tacoma that they only made maybe a couple hundred of or something. So, yeah, it could be cool. It's definitely not impossible. They make a hydrogen car now. They could make a hydrogen truck.
Tomorrow if they wanted to.
Yeah. That would also be another one that would maybe be harder to market.
Yes.
But they could do it. They definitely could.
What's on your list?
Last thing on my list is off-road trims in trucks now because – looking back, not even that far, you could go out and buy a Z71. You could get a G80 rear locker.
FX4.
An FX4, and that was pretty rugged. These days, the off-road trucks that you can go buy with factory winches, skid plates, steel bumpers, long travel, live valve suspension, front rear lockers, full-time four-wheel drive systems. There's so many innovations, off-road features that you can get in a truck from the factory, covered by warranty, it's crash certified and everything. It's spectacular. It's unbelievable, the off-road vehicles and the amount of capability you can get straight out of the box now.
Exactly. Cole, can you bring up a Ram Warlock? Recently, we had a Warlock, the blue truck,
yeah,
as a loan from Ram. And that's just one other example. I mean, the Warlock is not the most hardcore off-roader that Ram is building right now, obviously, because there's the RHO and there is the Rebel lineups that they have.
And on the bigger side, Power Wagon still, which is also great.
But like you said, choice. There used to be maybe one off-road version of some sort, but now there's 3 or 4 different types of suspensions and options. And this truck was a little bit more on the affordable side. I can't remember. It was like 50,000 or something like that. Oh, look, I'm wearing my flat bill hat. You know,
nice.
That's how cool I felt in that particular Ram.
Very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, and you think about it on the Ford side of things, like you said, FX4, Tremor, Raptor, Raptor R.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different off-road trims, but those Halo off-road trims offer some unbelievable pieces of hardware and also software, some really advanced traction control and four-wheel drive systems, all straight out of the factory, right off of the assembly line. It's unbelievable. You can get some fantastically capable trucks
yeah.
and take it from the dealer lot straight to the trailhead, which we've done several times.
And manufacturers like Ford and Ram and GM and Toyota, they prove out a lot of those parts in racing. So a GM, for example, ZR2, I've kind of chased them around a little bit in the desert. You know, the ZR2 and Bison type quality components
yeah.
are
they,
proven.
They invited you there. They weren't running away from you.
Correct. Yeah, I was allowed to chase them.
Yes.
I think Cole and I chased the Mint 400, Cole's favorite event, automotively speaking.
Mint 400 is iconic.
Yeah, Mint 400. Cole really enjoyed it.
That was the first press trip I ever did was with Stephen Elmer on the Mint 400.
Oh, yes. Yes, you guys
also
went out
there.
Also with GM. Yes, exactly. So these parts, these off-road components are proven in racing. They are perfected, you know, they're tested together. And like you said, with warranty offered to the customers.
Yeah.
To anybody.
How awesome is that? I would argue that we're in the golden age of off-road trucks. And same thing, likewise with
and
SUVs.
And with all trucks, yeah.
Yeah, SUVs as well. There's fantastic off-road trims you can get from the factory in SUVs. So it's really, off-road trucks especially, in the golden age. Maybe soon.
Cole and I brought up a video where we did a trip in the Colorado ZR2, Vegas to Reno off-road.
Yeah, which
that was a heavy event for us.
A lot
because
of off-road driving.
We were 3 days, 3 days of off-road driving.
Because basically that entire trip was off-road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we may also be heading into an upcoming golden era of some street trucks because they seem to
yeah.
be coming back.
For
that
example,
could be interesting
too. F-150 Lobo, there are lots of rumors about what Ram is doing. We saw the Ram
dude.
At SEMA.
Yeah.
Dude.
Had side pipes.
Dude, yes. The F-150 Lobo is slightly lowered, has V8 power. So there could be a resurgence, like you said, in also street-worthy performance trucks.
Yeah. And
yeah.
you can go to the factory and get a supercharge slapped onto a Coyote-powered F-150 as well. So if you feel like the Lobo is maybe a little too mild, which...
it could be.
Yeah, I would argue it probably is. Slap a supercharger on it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a lot of really cool...
I think next year, 2026, will be very interesting because we had maybe not a lot of like thorough, you know, new generation trucks this year in 2025.
Yeah.
But next year, because we're looking towards 2027 model year trucks, we already have seen lots of prototypes from GM on their full-size trucks. We could see some updates on the heavy-duty side, right, for several manufacturers. So next year is looking like, plus... who knows what Ram is doing? Maybe they might bring an SRT street truck back, right? So of some kind.
I'd be happy with that. It's probably not going to have a V10 in it, but if it had side pipes, I'd still be pretty happy.
There you go. It could be the dude.
It could be the dude.
It could be the dude. So wrapping up a little bit, I'm going to do one item I'm not thankful for. And it has to do with some things we already talked about. But I'm not thankful for really expensive trucks.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the excitement that you and I just talked about, off-road capable trucks, really high output diesels, lots of engine options, those are all inadvertently creating this, you know, price increase, right, in these vehicles.
Yeah, and
I would like to see some affordable mid-size trucks.
Which is
not
fair.
Fancy ones, but yeah. affordable. We started this podcast with talking about Slate.
Yeah.
Right? So Slate, that's the whole story behind that company. I don't know if they'll be successful. They're still a startup because it's a two-door little pickup, which is the only thing they offer, right? I mean, other than the SUV body that you can put on top of it.
Yeah, kind of convert it.
But we need a little bit more. What happens to a, what happened to a, well, Toyota offers a two-door-ish Tacoma SR, but many other manufacturers don't. Ford doesn't. GM doesn't. Why not have a little bit more affordable, simple midsizers?
It's true. It's a tough balance because I get excited talking about some of the really cool trucks that are out now, stuff that you could go out there and buy.
I do too.
I think sometimes, well, we see a lot of valid comments about the prices of trucks being out of control, and that's why we've talked about it several times on this podcast and in videos. I think sometimes people will write off new trucks because they are so pricey, and I can understand why. I own a 30-year-old truck for that reason. But the two aren't mutually exclusive. New trucks are great at a lot of things. They are also very pricey.
But I think where manufacturers maybe are the area they're getting trapped into, because basically all of them are publicly traded companies, yeah, right? They're interested in profits, revenue and profits, and to bring shareholder value and also obviously a lot of value. They're focused on creating these packages. You know, in order to buy a sunroof, you also have to buy this. Or in order to buy this engine,
$8,000 technology package.
Yeah, in order to get this engine, you also have to buy that. They figured out ways to really, you know, get us to channel us into buying something quite expensive. But like we talked about, offering of different engines, they don't have to sell a lot of them. But give us a slightly simpler track to go down, you know, something more affordable.
And on the bright side, there seems to be more manufacturers now talking about the need for more affordable trucks than, more so in the last couple months than in the last several years. So it seems, however, maybe a little too slowly, but manufacturers are starting to notice that.
Yeah, I want to see more competitors to the Maverick, like we talked about previously in other podcasts. And also Ford has teased us. They didn't show anything, but they said a $30,000 four-door little pickup is coming. So that's within 2 years. So that could be really interesting.
Yeah, and I think I saw in the news that there's even a lot of high-ups at American auto manufacturers that are going to be meeting with government officials to talk about some of the regulations and things that require certain features in vehicles that
which are expensive to
drive the prices up.
Produce, yeah.
So who knows? Maybe there will be some more affordable trucks on the market soon. That would be fantastic. I still like older vehicles. So yeah, I haven't been shopping around for new trucks, but we're lucky I get to drive cool new trucks at work.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, and, if and you said, hey, Andre, do you want an F-150 Raptor? Yeah, I do. But will I buy one? Probably not.
No.
So it's just outside of what kind of makes sense for my life right now, as far as price is concerned.
I think it's very cool that we get to test them. I do always feel good when I get back in my 30-year-old Ram, though.
It's like going back to your house.
I was driving one of the half tons that we were testing for Truck of the Year, which those videos are starting to publish now. I was driving one of those trucks for a couple days, and I was so happy to get back in my old truck. Yeah.
That's a good feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Good. But no, new trucks are great at a lot of things. So
I tend to get spoiled a little bit more, like just coddled by the new trucks, you know?
Oh, and I hear, not to.
Sorry, is that a bad image?
No, not to bring an age thing into it. But Roman says at least as he gets older, he likes more comfortable vehicles.
I am also getting a little older.
My Ram is not so comfortable.
No. I mean, some jumping in a brand new truck with your podcast already playing. And your heated seat already on.
Well,
there's something about that that's really attractive, I think.
Yeah, and you've got a family and dog and all kind of stuff. So Yeah, a single cab, second gen probably wouldn't work.
Not as well, probably.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, well, let us know what you think in the comments below. Hopefully you're enjoying your family time if you're listening to us during the holidays. Really appreciate you, and thanks for your Patreon support as well.
And drop us a comment, too. Any truck features or any particular trucks or truck experiences that you're thankful for, we'd love to hear them.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thanks very much.